Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a responsible day for the 24th day of Cheshvan. Today we're going to do two quick tshuvot, one by the Chatam Sofer on warming a mikvah on Yom Tov, on a holiday, and then also the Binyan Sion on changing charity money to a different purpose. The person had originally given money for one, not charity actually, for a mitzvah purpose, and he wanted to change it actually to a charity purpose. So we'll see that as well. Let's start by thanking the OU, Rabbi Jacob Bromwich, David Hachhauser, for their help in making these shirim available online. Now let's plunge into the Shit Chatam Sofer, Chilek Aleph, Orechaim Simon Kuf Mem Vav, where a Rav had written to the Chatam Sofer saying that he had a case in his community, and he had passed X way, we'll see in a second what it is, he had ruled in a certain way, and he was checking with the Chatam Sofer of whether he got it right or wrong. So, the issue was, it was a woman who had to go to mikvah on a Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galiot. The reason why Yom Tov Sheni could be important, theoretically, is that is a rabbinic extension of the holiday, meaning that in the time before that we had a fixed calendar and witnesses came, there were places far away from where the calendar was set who would not know which day of a month was Rosh Chodesh, one of the two candidate days, and therefore they would be forced to keep a holiday in that month, since the messengers wouldn't get to them by the 15 days between Rosh Chodesh and the holiday, they would have to keep 2 days of the holiday. And that is the source of our custom. Later when the calendar got fixed, so there's a whole discussion about it, but the ruling of Chazal was that we should continue that custom, that minhag. So that holiday, that second day, is assumed to be a rabbinic holiday, meaning that when we were observing it, we're not, if one were to violate Torah law, they'd be violating a rabbinic, on that holiday, they'd be violating a rabbinic holiday because it's only, okay, so that's could be a relevant consideration. Woman had to go to mikvah, and the mikvah water was cold, as can happen, so she wanted to have it be heated. Now, nowadays, things get heated continuously, you don't have to worry about it, but in their time, you couldn't do that. I'm sorry, and this response is dated the 24th of day of Cheshvan of Tov Kuf Samach Tet of 1808. So in 1808, you didn't have a way to continuously heat something or to easily heat something. What you had to do was you had to heat water. And then there are ways to mix in the hot water so the mikveh gets warmer. Whatever those ways are, that's a mikveh question, which is not our issue here. Our issue is a holiday question. So this Rav was trying to find a way to help out this woman. She was weak. She was neget, which means that she was very delicate. She needed the water to be warmed up. So during the week, it's easy. You warm the water. But now, the halacha is, and a lot of people don't know this, and I think this is part of what caught my eye about this tshuva, a lot of people don't realize that the halacha of warming water on Yom Tov is not so simple. This comes up in our times. People want to take hot showers sometimes on the second day of Yom Tov, and it has some of these issues come up, as we'll see at the end of the response. But warming water on Yom Tov is not so simple because what's permitted on Yom Tov fundamentally is what's called melechet ochel nefesh, which generally is assumed to mean work that's done, creative work, not work like going to a job, work, halachic, creative work that's done for the purpose of allowing people to eat, ochel nefesh. So her going to mikvah has no eating aspect to it, and you might have thought, therefore, you can't warm water for it, you can't light a fire for it, you can't do this, you can't do this. Therefore, this Rav, to try to avoid that problem, had ruled that while they're warming the water for the mikvah, they should cook something else near that fire. That will make the fire a fire that was being used for melechet ochel nefesh. Now, the fact is that we in halacha generally say that mitoch shehu trela hotzorech, hu trela shelo letzorech, that lighting fires was permitted litzorech for the needs of the Yom Tov, so it's also permitted not for the needs of Yom Tov. But the assumption here of this Rav, and the Chatzim Sofer doesn't contradict that at all, is that it has to be for Ochel Nefesh, however. But we'll talk about what the term Ochel Nefesh means later in the responsive, but that was his concern. So he therefore said, you have to cook something on the fire that you lit for the purpose of heating the mikvah water. And then he also said, and so what they did was, it seems like what they did was, they would heat a huge pot of water, and then they would find a way to mix that into the mikvah water. So if mikvos have enough water in them, a mikvah that has more than 40 saw of water in it, you can put as much new, or much other water as you want into it, because then it doesn't pass the mikvah water. So generally, that's what happens with mikvos, is that you'll try to get that first 40 saw you need to get in somehow, and then you try to make sure it never goes below 40 saw, and you can keep piping in water because you don't have to worry about it. I think that's true. That's my understanding. I think they even, to protect it more, they have, anyway, not our discussion. But the water that you're heating up to put into the mikveh to make the mikveh warmer, he said, and take some of that water as well for eating or drinking it. And then, in other words, his idea was, I have to heat water. My real purpose in heating the water is to be able to heat, to warm the mikveh. But if I make use of the fire that I'm using, I make use of the water that I'm using for ochel nefesh purposes, that will get me out of the problem. And he had apparently written a long letter to Chazam Sofer trying to prove why he thinks he was right and why he justified it and why it worked out. And that's his claim. So the Chazam Sofer says, the whole idea of cooking something, even though he was planning on having people take from the water, meaning if your challenge is that you want the water to catch ochel nefesh, then once you're going to take some of that water to drink or to use for eating purposes, you already would have done it. So why would you cook based on the fire as well? Or cook something else on the fire? But the service says, apparently you were worried that after they took away the water for the drinking, maybe they would add more water or more wood, because very often what they did was they added wood to the fire to keep the water hot. So maybe they didn't pour the water from the hot water heater into the mikveh. Maybe they had some way to put it near the mikveh. I'm not exactly sure the technicalities of where it was, because in other words, but it would be similar to the idea. If you've ever sat in a sauna or in a schwitz, you occasionally pour hot water on the coals. You add heat to get the heat to go up here too. They might add fuel to the fire to keep it going so they can continue heating the mikveh while she's going in. If that's true, and they do that after they've already taken the water from it, so that's why he said no. So cook something, meaning by something, you know, if I put a turkey onto the fire while I'm trying to heat this woman, the mikveh for this woman, so the turkey is going to take 3, 4, 5 hours to cook. So that'll be something that'll be ongoing, and therefore, even if I had more fire, that fire will be being added for that. That may be what that Rav was thinking about. Because if you just base it on people take water, well, they might add wood to the fire after they already took the water. So theoretically, you could say we'll take water a couple of times. But in any case, that's not what the Rav seems to have said, and that's the way Chatzim Sofer is understanding his reasoning. And he says explicitly that the item that was cooking, the food that was cooking, would be there the whole time. It could be a pot of soup, it could be a turkey, like I said, it could be anything, but as long as it's there the whole time, then any added fuel will be for that as well. So the Rav Chatzim Sofer says, but it doesn't quite work the way you want it to, because if you said take water for Tzorech Yom Tov, what generally happens is that when water is taken from a pot like that, in those situations, the people running it, the people in this case will be women because it's a woman going to mikvah, there'll be women overseeing it, would most likely add water to fill it up because they want to have a full thing there to create the maximal heat that they can get, and therefore you've lost what you're striving for, because that new water they put in was cold, it's being put into a hot thing, it's being cooked, and it's being cooked for a non-melechet ochel nefesh purpose, for a non-food or drink purpose, and therefore your solution doesn't quite work. Now, theoretically, you could say, well, I carefully warn them not to put in any more water, start with a huge amount of water, take some water, and I told them not to put in any more. Theoretically, that could work. Or you could just, theoretically, he could have said, well, continue to take water, right? Take water every 20 minutes or whatever it is. And that tells us, and by the way, the worry that people will add in water, like today in hot water systems in houses, the worry that people had in hot water, so in the houses it happens automatically. Every time you take out of a boiler, the more water goes into the boiler to make sure that the boiler is full of hot water. So the gezeira that we're worried about, that is a much more common gezeira, much more common worry in halakha, and much more common to create a decree not to do such things. Even then, the general gezeirat marchatzaot, meaning that the whole idea that we can't go to a shvitz or a shower or a bathhouse, and Yom Tov, we're going to talk about why that is. It's about look at Rishonim, a debate among the Rishonim as to why one isn't supposed to do that in Yom Tov. But one option is that it's what's called gezeirat marchatzaot, that you're worried that if you go to such a place, the people in charge of it will not keep Yom Tov the proper way, and they'll add, for example, they'll add water, and they'll heat up water completely for the purpose of washing, which is not a melechet ochel nefesh purpose, and therefore, you shouldn't go. So it's a little silver, but that worry is much more distant, because it's not always so often that the people running a bathhouse are going to add water when they know that they're not supposed to, as much as the chashash, the worry that women are going to add water to water they're heating up, because that people do all the time, because it's just a sort of almost, it's a natural, it's a very well established practice. If you're warming something, if you're heating up water for the purpose of warming things, you'll try to keep that pot full, and therefore if people take things out, you'll put come in and you'll refill it. So he's not thrilled with that response, that answer. Meaning it's not that he doesn't think it's wrong, but he doesn't think it solves the problem fully. So then he says, but to help you out, I'm going to tell you why I think you didn't get the hora'ah wrong. I don't think your actual answer was wrong. I think your solutions weren't great, weren't perfect, but I don't think your actual answer was wrong. Then he throws in a verse from Mishlei, lo yu'ne la tzadik kol aven. Evil doesn't befall or doesn't happenstance upon tzadikim, upon the righteous, which is a way of saying that you're a good guy, you're trying your best, and that Kadosh Baruch Hu sort of makes it work out. I'm going to show you the way that it, I think it worked out, but he throws in, but I don't think that it's a strong enough reasoning that you can rely on it for heterim in the future. So Chazal Sofer is clearly doing a favor for this guy. He's trying to help him feel good about himself. He's trying to help him feel, have a clearer conscience. Now, I'm not saying he's lying for that purpose, but he's putting together a heter, putting together an avenue of permissibility, which once it was done can let you sleep at night, but if it comes up again, you shouldn't be relying on. So, how does he get there? First question is, what is the problem on Yom Tov with heating water to wash oneself? Right, to wash one's whole body, to go into a full shower. The Rif and the Rambam think it's not prohibited to havale shave lechol nefesh. They think, so shave lechol nefesh is a standard of what qualifies as malechet ochel nefesh. When we want to say that I'm doing something for the purpose of eating, what if I'm doing this very strange thing? It's a violation of Yom Tov, and it's very strange, but I say that it's for me to eat. So does that count? So we usually say it's going to be a davar hashave lechol nefesh. It's going to be the kind of thing that people in general eat and enjoy and do. And that actually is one of the questions that came up in the context of whether one could smoke cigarettes on Yom Tov, whether it was a shovel lechol nefesh or not, whether it was really the kind of thing that people in general enjoy. Not our topic today. So the Rif and the Rambam hold that bathing, showering, what we today call showering, but bathing, using hot water, heating hot water to wash one's whole body, that's a shovel lechol nefesh. So if you could drink the water, you could say, since the water could have been cooked, could have been heated to drink, it could also be heated to wash, or possibly even, since you say they held that washing, bathing, is a shovel lechol nefesh, is the kind of thing that everybody does and everybody enjoys, or by and large, people enjoy and like, and therefore it's one of the permissible physical pleasures. Being melechet ochel nefesh, that wouldn't mean specifically eating; it would mean bodily pleasures, getting bodily benefit that people in general enjoy. Then it would be okay. The only reason that it became usher then was mishum gezeira yom tov atu shabbos v'chulachad gezeirat. When we see in the Gemara that it's not allowed to go to a batei merchat zaon, you can't go to bathhouses in yom tov. That's because not because it itself is prohibited, but because we're worried that you'll do it on Shabbat and it's called gezeirat merchat zaon. Now you'll go there on Shabbat when you're not allowed to. That, not that it's his topic today. Not his topic. We're not going to discuss it. But that makes you wonder about the shower in question on Yom Tov. When you shower, if you put your whole body in a shower on Yom Tov, is that part of that original gzeirah? Meaning maybe that decree was only when people went to bathhouses, but in their own homes not, or the other way around. Maybe you could say no, even more so, when people could just step into a shower in their own homes, and on Shabbos you're not allowed to, because on Shabbos, when you turn on the shower water, that water may have been heated before Shabbat, but other water's coming in and being heated on a Shabbat. You certainly can't heat water. You can't heat water to drink it on Shabbat, if it was cold, so you certainly can't heat it to wash yourself. But the fact that it becomes then a rabbinic issue of this gezeirah, of this decree, then it should be equally problematic on the second day of Yom Tov. This is going to be an example of what comes up in Halachas, which is that a kula leads to a chumra. Rabbi Willick, I remember when I was in Smicha, Mordechai Willick was already used to say every kula leads to a chumra. Every time you think you're being lenient about something, you actually ended up being stringent about something else, and I think every vice versa he held as well, that every chumra, every time you think you're being stringent, it's going to lead you to being lenient on something else. So here, it's a kula in that they think that on Yom Tov there's no Torah problem with bathing one's whole body, but there's a rabbinic problem. But that leads to a stringency, because since it's a rabbinic problem, there's no reason why it shouldn't apply equally on a Yom Tov Sheni. Because just like on the first day, Chazal were worried that if you let people on a day they think of as a holiday, because it's the first day of a holiday, it's an actual Torah holiday, if you let them on that day wash their whole bodies, they'll think they're allowed to do it on Shabbat as well. That reasoning applies just as well to Yom Tov Sheni, since in their experience, that's a holiday as well. So if you let them wash their whole bodies on a holiday, they're going to end up, they might might end up, this is the gzeira, this is the worry that Chazal had, they'll end up doing it on Yom Tov as well. And the Shach writes in Yeridea that if it's not prohibited on its own merits, it's prohibited as a shvus, or it's prohibited as a gzeira, as a decree, protective decree, then the same mistake people would make on the first day of Yom Tov, they make on the second day of Yom Tov. Then he proves, points out there's another such thing. If you have branches that fall off a tree on Shabbos, we say that you can't even use them on the next day, for the next day is Yom Tov, because we don't want Shabbos preparing for Yom Tov. And part of the reason for that might be that we're worried that if we let you use them the next day, you'll also use them on Shabbos itself, I think is the issue. So if that next day is Yom Tov Sheni, it's the same thing as well. We don't let you use it for the same exact reason, because you'll learn the wrong lessons from these things. So that's all for the Rif and the Rambam, who held that washing is a shavah l'chol nefesh. But interestingly, Tosfot, and I don't know for sure the history of this, but I think there's a cultural element to this, because Tosfot, who lived in France and Germany in the 11 and 1200s, basically the end of, pretty much the end of the 11th century, the end of the 1000s, and then the 11 and 1200s, they say that washing is prohibited, using hot water to wash oneself on Yom Tov is prohibited to wash one's whole body, because it's not a hana'ah shaveh l'chol dam. It's not the kind of thing that people generally do. I think, I really could be wrong, but I really, really think what he means is, I look around, in France and Germany, people didn't bathe that often. Right, so bathing your whole body wasn't the kind of thing that people did. Whereas I think that in Muslim countries where the Rif and the Rambam lived, such washing, such bathing was in fact something that people did. So that becomes, that's, they're not really debating what the definition of shaveh l'chol nefesh. Their understanding of washing one's whole body, it was shaped by their understanding of what that action was. In any case, once they say that, then that means that there's a Torah prohibition to wash on Shabbat, on Yom Tov. It would mean, though, that then they don't really talk about a gezerah, the gezerah of Yom Tov for Shabbos. They would have the protective decree to make sure you won't forget and do it on Shabbos. They don't really talk about that much, and it's not up to us, to the Chatam Sofer, to make up new decrees or new stringencies. It's important to know, because people think of the Chatam Sofer, I think they often think of him as being a very stringent kind of a person, but he's saying here, we don't make up stringencies if we don't have to, and therefore, we only have the reasoning of Tosfot, that the reason why we don't go to Mirchatzot is that we're worried, we don't even go to partially wash our body, because we're worried that the people running it will heat up the water so people can wash their whole bodies and things like that. So that's all about that background. Now, if you're going to come now to the question of this woman going to mikvah and how that affects our understanding of heating water on Yom Tov for her. Now, it has to be, and the assumption is there's some vital reason she needs to go to mikvah on Yom Tov, because otherwise you might say, let her just wait. So an example might be, there are opinions that hold, and we tend to hold, that tefillah bizmana mitzvah, that we very much prefer in halacha, that women go to mikvah on the first available time. Tefillah bizmana technically means something slightly different, because nowadays, because of lots of reasons for thousands of years, Jewish women don't go to mikvah on time. They actually generally delay their going to mikvah by virtue of the stringency they keep around deciding when they're allowed to go to mikvah. That's a whole different discussion. But when the first possible time for a woman to go to mikvah, there is if her husband's in town at least, there is a strong desire and preference by halacha that they should do that. So that would be a reason. So if you have a reason like that, Chatam Sofer says that's clearly shaveh l'chol nefesh, meaning even according to Tosfos, it's got to be shaveh l'chol nefesh. Why is it shaveh l'chol nefesh according to Tosfos? Because Tosfos is talking about the fact that in their times, the people they knew, people didn't tend to bathe. So if they didn't tend to bathe, it's not shaveh l'chol nefesh, and it's just the finicky people who go but immersing in a mikvah, everybody does it. You're required to do it. All women do it. That's what happens. That's the way Jewish women live. But the only question is this woman going to immerse her entire body in cold water, which everybody agrees is a tsar, is a pain for the woman doing it, or is she going to be allowed to heat the water so that she can immerse herself in a warm or in a warm mikvah? So that, says the Chatam Sofer, is clearly a shaveh l'chol nefesh issue, that all women, all people really, who were required to immerse in a mikvah would want it to be warm rather than cold, and therefore he thinks there isn't a problem of a dough right to the level of cooking the water. You're heating the water. In other words, he's saying basically you didn't need to cook other food on the fire. You didn't have to worry about that. You didn't have to worry about taking water out, because I think that the heating water for mikveh purposes is clearly a shaveh l'chol nefesh. It's clearly a matter that everybody wants and needs, those people who have to go to mikveh, and therefore I don't think there's a dough right to problem. Now, it's not so simple because, first of all, we've mentioned before, there's a gzeirat merchatza. We're not supposed to be doing these things because we're worried that people will go to bathhouses and they'll forget to do it on Shabbos and all those things that we mentioned before. So theoretically, you could say, let her wait a day. So we prefer not to have women wait in those situations, is what the Chatam Sofer is saying. But he points out the Chatam, and he says, the whole idea of heating mikvot doesn't, he understands it appear in the Gemara. There's a Tosot he points to that seems to assume that the Gemara already knew about heating mikvot, but he doesn't think that it was so common in the Gemara. Now, anyway, he doesn't assume it's so common in the Gemara that it was well recognized that you could heat mikvot. He didn't think people generally did that, and that's a much more modern solution to the problem of cold mikvot. But you are clearly pushing something aside in order to have it happen. And he points out that the Chacham Tzvi was very upset about heating mikvot on Friday nights. Now, there you'd have to heat the water before. You wouldn't do anything on Shabbos because you're not allowed to. But you heat the mikvah on Friday night, but you're still pushing aside a gezeirah of merchatzaot, the decree, the prohibition against going to bathhouses, and you're doing it for the purpose of the woman going to the mikvah. And he said, the Chacham Tzvi came up with what he thought of as a better answer. He said, let the women go to mikvah on Friday afternoon, late on Friday afternoon, close to the stars coming out, meaning ben hashmashot. So it's already Shabbat in a technical sense, but it's not fully Shabbat. And then the women wait there until after Shabbat is fully enters, and then they go home. So that would be an option, and that avoids many of the problems. Or he said, don't heat the mikvah water, just warm it to take off the bitter edge of the cold of it, but don't warm it all the way. And it's all Erev Shabbat, and therefore the only gzeirah is merchatzaot. So then he shows that fundamentally we do think that in order for the woman to be able to go to mikvah, in order for a couple to be able to have their ordinary married life, we in fact, at least the Yom Tov Sheni also would push aside certain things for the purpose of allowing these things to happen. So the example that he brings up is a Zoran that talks about the possibility of extinguishing a flame so a couple could have marital relations and not be engaging that activity in the light, which Halakha frowned upon. So there's a whole discussion about whether you can put out the flame or not, and that might be only a Rabbanan issue at the time. It's a complicated discussion that I don't want to get into, but fundamentally that, we think that Machshirei Ochel Nefesh, that those things that you couldn't have done before Yom Tov, and they're helping get to an Ochel Nefesh situation, they should be allowed on Yom Tov itself, and therefore he thinks that this rabbi passed in the right way, because the Tashmish, their right to have marital relations, something we don't want to push aside. This is a Yom Tov Sheni, and it's a Machshirei Ochel Nefesh. It's a situation where it's the kind of thing that people get benefit from, and therefore qualifies the kind of thing that we say one is allowed to do on Yom Tov as opposed to Shabbat, and therefore all these come together. But it's not the kind of thing he wants bandied about broadly. He says nobody's ever done this before. It's not a general practice to warm mikvot on Yom Tov, let alone on Yom Tov Sheni, even though his reasoning would suggest that it could be. And he says, Lo ye'elakit varim ha'utarim, so we have a principle in halacha that if you have something that's generally permissible, that is permissible technically, and people don't realize that, and therefore they treat it like it's impermissible, the halacha is you're not supposed to go and tell them, you know what, that's really permissible. I think that's if they don't know that it's permissible, it's that they've decided they're going to treat it as prohibited. In this case, you could question that because you could say, well, I don't know that they know that it's prohibited. It's permissible. Maybe we should tell them it's permissible, see what they say. But the Chatam Sofer thinks that, I think it's just his basic conservatism coming out. He's saying that you should just stand back, especially since the Rif and the Rambam, who held that that's the whole point of the Gzeirah D'Rabbanan was for this situation, because they think there's no problem with thinking of it as Melechet Ochel Nefesh, and therefore they would have prohibited at a rabbinic level, completely prohibited it. And for all these reasons, he thinks that from now on, you shouldn't do this again, but that you shouldn't feel bad about what you did. And that's the 24th of Cheshvan, a Tav Kuf, Samach Tet. 16 years later, on the 24th of Cheshvan, of Mar Cheshvan, of Tav Resh Chaf Hey, of 18, I'm sorry, not at all 16 years later, 56 years later, on Tav Resh Chaf Hey, which was 1864, the Binyan Sion, who was a younger contemporary, he was like 30 years younger, a little over 30 years younger, 35, 36 years younger than the Chatam Sofer of Yaakov Ettlinger, and Shut Binyan Sion Simon Peibet, took up a different question. He's writing to his son-in-law, who's a Rav in a town, and the son-in-law was asked about a certain man, a wealthy man, who got in his head, he wanted to do something good for the Jewish people, and he wanted to do something proper and appropriate, and he says, you know what, I'm going to donate this sum of money to write a Sefer Torah, which can be a significant sum of money. And then, sometime after he had said he was going to do that, He heard about an orphanage opening in Yerushalayim, and he wanted to contribute generously to the building of that orphanage, but in his mind, now, he was a really wealthy man, I'm not sure why he couldn't have given both, but he doesn't think he has the money for both, and therefore he wants to just know, can he transfer the money from what he had thought it would be for writing a Sefer Torah, to this other valid, good purpose. So he's writing to his son-in-law, and he says, you opened up the discussion with talking about whether you can be matir and neder, whether you can find ways around an oath or a promise. So there is an halacha, this idea that if somebody makes an oath or a promise, that if they go to a chacham afterwards, the chacham finds out, can ascertain that the person didn't realize what they were doing fully, they didn't really fully understand what they were doing, and therefore they wouldn't have ever made the oath if they had had the choice, if they had realized what was going to happen. So that would be called, that's called heter nedarim. So this man, this son-in-law, had suggested that maybe that's here. The man can do a heter nedarim, turn the money from the Sefer Torah, writing the Torah scroll, and turning it into the other tzedakah purpose. And he pointed out, even with the Sefer Torah itself, so you can sell a Sefer Torah and you can use the money. Let's say he wrote the Sefer Torah. You can sell the Sefer Torah, use the money for whatever purpose you want. So he thought that before the Sefer Torah is even written, then he just has the money and he could turn it to another purpose. We all have another principle in halacha called hazmana lav milta, that we generally think that the fact that I say something should be for something doesn't have full halachic ramifications, and therefore that we don't think that, oh, now that money is money for that purpose. The examples in halacha are, let's say I weave thread. I don't think you weave thread. Let's say I string thread. I make it into thread. However you do, I get another verb for that. Sorry. Please feel free to email me at grothst@gmail.com with the answer to that question. If I make thread, the point of making the thread is to use it to weave material, and that material I intend to use for whatever purpose it is. At what point do we think that obligates me to use it for that purpose? That's actually a machloket in the Gemara between Abaye and Rava. So Abaye held that once you wove material for a purpose, even though it's not part of the garment that it is yet, that would be enough, and it's already set aside for that purpose, and you can't change it. So that's a level of preparation of if it's ready to be used for its purpose. The step back before this was called Tavi La'arig. Tavi La'arig is you're just making the threads that you intend to. So there, everybody agrees that that's not yet been used for its purpose. And the claim is, the point is, that when it comes to money for a Sefer Torah, that's much more like Tavi La'arig. It's like it's two steps removed from what everything is. It would be, let's say I had parchment, and I already set the parchment aside for the Sefer Torah. That would be more like Arig, that I have the materials ready to use. So if somebody had gone out and said, I'm planning on buying on having somebody write a Sefer Torah, and you go, you buy the parchment, that would be a discussion. So we have to rule, the Magen Avraham says, that, I'm sorry, we rule that, in fact, even if it's woven already, we think that in general, hazmana lav milta, somebody bought parchment and they intended to use it for a Sefer Torah, I think that's not yet fully dedicated to that Sefer Torah, because we'd say hazmana lav milta. But it is true that when it comes to money, there are those who hold that if you collect money for a Sefer Torah, then you can't change it unless you're going to use it for some higher purpose, some more. There's a whole hierarchy in halacha of what's considered stringent purposes. So if you can use it for that, but the Magen Avraham pointed out, that's when you collected the money from a whole community. But for an individual, the fact that an individual set aside money to plan to write a Sefer Torah, that would not seem to be because of this idea of hazmana lav milta, that we don't think that preparation counts with has halakhic ramifications, that it's already dedicated to its purpose, then it should be okay. Problem was, there's a Taz who wrote that when you offer money to good purposes, then it has a sense of a neder to it, of an actual oath to it. So if it has a sense of actual oath to it, then you'd be obligated to fulfill it. So if this man had made some kind of a halakhic neder to write a Sefer Torah, then you can't just change it. It's not a question of hazmana that he prepared it, it's that he made a ned there. So the father-in-law, the Binyan Sefer, says, you're right about everything you're saying. It is true that many Akronim did not give the Taz's answer to that question. The Beis Yosef, the Bach, they all knew the question in the Magen Avraham. They didn't give the answer that it's like a ned there, so maybe they didn't think it was a ned there, but they didn't specifically say it wasn't a ned there. So if the Taz gives a reason, then we should, and it makes sense, says the Binyan Sefer, then we should probably worry about that reason. So that would say, that's not an instrumentable barrier, which is say he needs to go to a Torah scholar and have do a petach and have a hataras nedarim and find a way to say that he wouldn't have made this commitment if he knew what was coming, and therefore it's an invalid commitment and he can change the money to something else. Okay, another stumbling block might have been that you might have thought it was what's called a neder al dat rabim, since he had planned to dedicate the donate the Sefer Torah to the shul. then you might think that the whole community is sort of part of this neder. And then when somebody makes a neder al dat rabbim, it becomes almost impossible, if not impossible, to be matir it, because it's not only his intentions that went into it, it's everybody's. And unless you could prove that everybody got it wrong, you have a problem. That's the reason why people make a neder al dat rabbim. It was a way to avoid, because in halacha, if you're going to have to make a neder to make sure that they do X, or Y, or Z, like I'm committing to you, and you want to be sure that I'm going to fulfill my commitment, then you'll say, well, take a neder. I want you to vow to do it. I want you to swear to do it. Well, that doesn't work so well, because I can, known to you or unbeknownst to you, go and find a chacham, say, I made a mistake, and I want you to be matir my neder. So once I do that, then it all goes away. So a way around that was to make it a neder al dat rabim. So here you might have thought it would count as a neder al dat rabim, that because the whole community is not dependent on the Sefer Torah, but they're expecting the Sefer Torah, maybe the neder is implicitly done with their consent and their opinions factored into it. So the Chavos of the opinion says that's not true at all, because he didn't say it that rabbi. You have to say it, and he says the Chavos Yair says that as well. And there was a guy, and the example of Chavos Yair was a guy who had offered a room in his house to be davened in by the public, and then he wanted to take it back and change it, and people wanted to say, well, you committed to it, and you committed to it, I'll dot rob him. So the answer is no, that's not true. And then the last little piece, and I left too little time for it, it's actually a whole topic of its own, so I'll just do it very, very briefly, is the Binyan Siyan says, all that's good, all that's fine, and you can do that unless this man hasn't yet written a Sefer Torah. So that gets to the midst of writing a Sefer Torah, which is not actually the real topic, was whether you could change money. But the writing Sefer Torah issue is, there's an official mitzvah of the Torah to write a Sefer Torah. Since the time of the Rush, however, already, the Rush seems to have said, and the others, the Rush said, he thinks that nowadays the people don't learn from Torah scrolls, then they can write other books. So the Binyan says, that's fine, but he would have to written other books, which is a much lower standard, because the man has, as long as the man has a Torah library that he's acquired, he would qualify for that. Then he points out another interesting Shagat Aryeh. Shagat Aryeh said, well, the whole mitzvah of writing Sefer Torah also, since the time of the Gemara, doesn't fully apply anymore, because we're not sure about the exact right way to write the Torah. The Gemara already points out that we're not so expert in what's called Kasirot Nitirot, in the exact spellings of words in the Torah. That's a difficult claim, because we still have Sefer Torah, and you can't say the whole mitzvah goes away. I mean, you can, but it's odd, and the Binyan Tzion says he doesn't think it's true, because he thinks that we just follow the majority opinion, as other Gemara say. So anyway, the whole discussion about that issue. But his fundamental position becomes, if you fulfill this mitzvah, then you can change something else. If you have fulfilled the mitzvah, then you can't. And then, so you have to have a whole discussion about, well, I'll fulfill it later. So he thinks that, in a lot of cases, you can't say I'll fulfill it later about things like that, and therefore he thinks that. So, sorry for butchering that last piece of it. I should have really just jumped to that, because that was a very interesting end piece of this tshuva. But fundamentally, for the 24th day of Cheshvan, we have two tshuvot, the Chatam Sofer, about warming a mikvah and the issues of warming water, heating water for bathing purposes on Yom Tov, and the issues that go into that, and the definition of Shavu L'chol Nefesh, of what counts as food-like things for people. And the Binyan Tzion, on when you committed money to one purpose, to what extent are you unable to commit them, to recommit them to a different purpose? What are these factors that come into play? And along the way, the question of what's the obligation, or how significant an obligation there is to writing Sefer Torah. And that is responsible day for the 24th of Cheshvan. My name is Gideon Rothstein, with thanks to the OU, Rabbi Jacob Bromwich, and David Hochhauser. I bid you a good day.